Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Here we are in this new time slot, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. New time, same quality programming. I promise you that. Well, today will be an interesting show. It's part two with Sydney Biddle Barrows, the Mayflower Madam. She's going to help us shed a light on many things, but I wanted to say by way of introduction that we have a sex industry because we need, and guess what? We want one. And understanding the people in this, it's a huge industry, let's face it, is not helped by either idealizing or condemning them. So my belief is once we acknowledge this exchange, we learn about them, the better we can understand aspects of ourselves and our own sexuality. Now, Sydney Barrows is not a sex worker. She's not an escort. But she once ran a service, and she wrote a best-selling book called The Mayflower Madam. Those of you who are over, what, Sydney, maybe 40 will remember.
No, it was 1984.
Okay.
So you figure that people don't really start paying attention to this kind of thing until they're at least 25, probably.
Okay. Yeah, so do the math.
Yeah. But so unless you were 25 in 1984, you probably, and even more.
And then I first met Sydney 20 years ago on the Christina Show in Miami, Florida. And and that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
Who was that little Latino guy who was, he had a big hit at the time. Do you remember him?
Ricky Martin?
No, it wasn't Ricky Martin. He was a guy, and he danced on the same show we were on.
Well, I don't remember.
I don't remember that. Sort of a flash in the pan because I don't think he had much going on after that. So Sydney Barrows was first on this program on August 22nd. So this is part two, and we're going to repeat some of what we talked about because it will appeal to this listening audience, I believe, but also your business part. And so the second half of the show, we're going to get into that, how you have transitioned. Well, you've done it. You did it years ago, but you are a really good businesswoman. So, but I think the listening audience would like to hear how did a nice girl like you get into the business. Repeat a little bit more about the story because it's a fascinating story.
Oh, okay. I won't tell you the long version again because it takes about 15 minutes.
Right.
But basically, I was fired from a job that I had because I refused to participate in a kickback scheme. And as I always like to say, I may be a little crazy, but I'm not dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Another gal who was standing on the unemployment line at the same time I was, and this will give you an idea of how long ago that was because nobody stands on unemployment lines anymore, so we started hanging out together because you can't look for a job 24/7. And I went down to her apartment one day, and she was unpacking a brand new stereo. And I knew she didn't have any money. And she eventually confided in me that she was answering the phones for an escort service, which, of course, I had absolutely no idea what that was. And when I found out, I was properly horrified and said what I think anybody in a, similarly impoverished position might have said, because I don't care what anyone says, you cannot live on unemployment. I said, if anything ever comes up, let me know.
Right, right.
And I said, well, let me repeat again. She was answering the phones for an escort service. That's all she was doing. And so one day, I got a call from her saying, hey, Sydney, one of the girls in the office is leaving. Would you be interested in the job?
Mm-hmm.
And just to cut to the chase, I did end up taking it. And both of us realized that we were at least as smart as he is, and definitely nicer than he was. And so we decided to open up our own agency, which we did. And it was unbelievably successful. And,
You called it cachet.
We called it cachet.
And it wasn't until New York's finest shut
it down.
Yeah.
Only to later publicly concede that it was the most well-run business of its kind ever operated in New York City.
Yeah, well, what? I wonder why they shut it down. There must have been a report. They must have.
It was a landlord, as my lawyer likes to say, it was a landlord-tenant case gone awry. And it's a long story, but that's basically what it was. It started out as a landlord-tenant case and got out of hand.
So, but you did a lot in those 5.5 years for the girls who worked for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they trusted you, and they were mostly students, and talk a little bit about that.
They were mainly students, but students of all different kinds of things. I had a lot of actresses, girls who wanted to, you know, be singers, you know, people in the performing arts
mm-hmm.
who need to take classes and that sort of thing. But also a lot of college girls. I mean, I had a girl in medical school, and then I had gals who were just starting out and in businesses like publishing, the magazine business, which notoriously pay nothing, same with publicity.
Mm-hmm,
and,
yes.
You know, they knew what they wanted to do. They just needed to be able to keep a roof over their heads until they were making enough money that, you know, they could do it, you know, without doing anything else. And so there was, I did not hire anyone who did not do something else. I mean, you could not roll out of bed at 4 p.m. and work for me. And that's all you did. I wanted my young ladies to have something to say to my clients because my clients were the kind of people who wanted someone who had something to say.
Precisely, and that's one reason, of course, you were such a success. Cachet was such a success. Because, you know, what I've always said is that, irrespective of your business, we do spend lots, in life, we spend lots more time in conversation than we do in bed. And, but even with your business, most of your clients probably wanted some conversation. They wanted some intelligence. They wanted some, emotional foreplay or maybe not?
Well, you know, if you were someone who all you wanted was to have someone walk in the door, do you, you know, for lack of a better word, and leave, we weren't the agency you called.
Yes.
You know, we had much more upscale men, and most of them, they were divided between men who traveled a lot and people who actually lived here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get to both of them. So the ones who were traveling a lot, you know, they wanted some companionship. You know, they spent
mm-hmm.
all day doing business around business people, you know, always having to be on your guard, always, you know, doing business. And when that day was over, they just wanted to relax, hang out with someone, have a conversation, have a nice dinner, have a drink. You know, they wanted to relax.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't just want to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely didn't just want to have sex. I mean, you know, so many of those calls were more than an hour. And even the ones that were just an hour, in fact, for pretty much all of them, I would say no more than 20 minutes was usually spent, you know, doing the horizontal mambo, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Most of it really was spent talking. And with respect to the residential clients, most of them, but not all of them, were single.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked so hard. And a lot of them worked crazy hours. I mean, if you're a currency trader, you know, you have to be awake and working when the Tokyo market is open, when, you know, when the London market is open. And so they didn't have time for a girlfriend.
Right.
And
exactly.
So they would call us because they wanted a sure thing. But they didn't want to just have someone come over and, you know, and do it and leave either. You know, they wanted to hang out also. I can't tell you how many times we get a call on for Super Bowl Sunday, the guys just wanted a girl to come over and just hang out with them and watch the game. I always thought that was kind of so sad that they didn't even have anyone that they could do that with. But we had a lot of that.
Yes, the companionship was important. So
yeah, absolutely.
Some of these men, no doubt, were a little bit lonely.
Very well, even, listen, I hate
but
to
a
tell
bit
you
lonely.
This. But, Diana, a lot of the ones who are married were lonely, too.
Of course.
And that's what a lot of people don't realize, is how important it is to, well, I know that's going to be a later part of the conversation.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. You know, why it is that men go to call girls. But before we do, you wrote a book. How long after you were shut down, Cachet was shut down, you wrote Mayflower Madam, how long after that?
Well, after, you know, the whole thing ended up, I just paid a $5,000 fine and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And but then I got the legal bill, and it was way, 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 way more than $5,000, I assure you.
Yeah.
And so when I looked at my lawyers and said, oh, my God, I couldn't. I probably never will make this much money in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And they handed me a sheaf, you know, they handed me a file folder with all of these people who wanted to for me to write the story. And so
Right.
I originally was not planning on writing the book, but, you know, I had to because I needed to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Let's see. It was October 11th of 1984 that we were busted, and
mm-hmm.
the book came out in September of 1986.
1986, okay. And I know the story, but I think our listeners would like to know, how come you're called the Mayflower Madam?
Ah, because I'm descended on both sides from the original pilgrims who came over on the Mayflower.
Yeah, and
a lot of people think it has something to do with the Mayflower Hotel. No. Nothing to do with that.
Well, so you come from a rather... sometimes referred to as blue-blooded family. Was your family rather askance, some of them, when you were revealed as having done this business?
Well, my grandmother, after whom I'm named, so that would be my father's mother,
mm-hmm.
she was very upset about it because, you know, you see your name in print all the time associated with this kind of thing, and, you know, you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that.
Right.
But my mother's side of the family, and, of course, you know, she had so much money that... everybody on that side of the family sided with her for obvious, you know, financial and economic reasons, and I understand
yeah.
that too.
Yeah.
But my mother's side of the family was great about it. I mean, I'm not saying that anybody approved at all because they
mm-hmm.
didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But let's face it, sure gives you something interesting, you know, to sit around the Thanksgiving table and you know, and Christmas and then talk about, you know. I mean, everybody loves having sort of someone naughty in their family that they can talk about. So, and I mean, you have to remember something. There were no underage girls involved. There were no drugs involved. It was all done in a very escort-affirming way. In other words, you know, everything
yeah.
was always, you know, I mean, the girl was always right. Forget about the customer being right. The girl was always right.
Yeah.
The young lady was always right. And
mm-hmm.
and it was just, you know, I mean, I didn't. You know, I didn't try to convince anyone to do this. I mean, they all came to me. They all answered the ad and came to me. They all begged me to hire them, and I didn't go out in the street and, you know, sit, you know, try to lure anybody in. I mean, this is completely and totally voluntary.
Yes,
and,
I believe that.
And anyone who mm-hmm. is in this business and it's not voluntary, I think they ought to throw away the key on those people. Because it's one thing to do it because that's your choice. And it's another thing, this whole white slave trafficking thing, which just horrifies me so much I just don't even know where to start. And
exactly.
that I totally do not believe in.
No. So you probably interviewed these girls and...
Oh, sure.
And back in the day, you probably were able to do background checks? And did you go that far?
No, because there was no Internet back then.
No.
You know, you're talking about the early 80s.
We take a lot for granted.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's take this second, speaking of the Internet, and tell people how they can find out more about you. On the Internet.
Well, as we speak, Russians attacked my site and turned my website, sydneybarrows.com, and turned it to an attack site. So I'm actually spent all day today working on copy for the new site. But I also have a second business called Roadblock Removal, and
right.
that site is up, and that is, you know, roadblockremoval.com, just like it sounds, Roadblock
right.
Removal.
And we're going to talk more about that in the second half because that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So... you kind of worked it through. You weren't completely disowned by your family, and but you had a cute moniker, the Mayflower Madam.
Yeah.
And so I would like to know why you think men go to call girls. Why do they go to high-end call girls?
Well, there are myriad reasons,
yeah.
but one of the things that I you know, I have a talk called Just Between Us Girls that I give. And one of the first things that I assure the women, and it's women only, no men are allowed in,
mm-hmm.
is that most of the time, the vast majority of the time, it has nothing to do with you, meaning the woman. Because we're always the first to blame ourselves. If I only did this, if I only did that, mm-hmm. if I only were thinner, if my boobs were only bigger, blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah. And most of the time it has nothing
yes.
to do with them.
Yes.
I mean, there are a lot of guys who, and, you know, I know this is an internet thing, so I can use the word. There are a lot of men who just plain old, they're just pussy hounds. That's
mm-hmm.
just who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
think Bill Clinton. And,
sure.
and that's just who they are. And for the most part, who they're doing it with really honestly means nothing to them. And they know, and most of the time they don't even care. They're not interested in having a relationship with these people. They just like, you know, sleeping with various different people.
I think that's kind of built into a lot of guys in terms of their DNA that they like some variety.
Mm-hmm.
And they also like the high, the initial high. Your friend Helen Fisher talks about this,
mm-hmm.
that in the beginning of a relationship, now it's different when you're paying for sex, but you do get that high. It's the new person, it's the romance, it's the sexy stuff, the new stuff that you can do, the novelty, which produces more dopamine, the hormone of arousal.
Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then there
yeah.
are men who are very, very successful, and they feel, well, this is something that very successful people do. You know, now that I'm making a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
this is what very successful people do, is they pay to have sex whenever they want to, in addition to sleeping with their wives. But when they're away, you know, they would never dream of doing it in their hometown.
Yeah.
But a lot of
yes.
them just feel entitled. You know, I make a lot of money. I work really hard, and I deserve it.
Right.
And also to them, I mean, what's interesting is that very rarely did a client want to see somebody multiple times. Sometimes they'd want to see a girl twice, but usually not more than twice. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it was extremely rare for someone to fixate on one girl and want to see her over and over. Extremely rare. Because that's not what it was about. It
mm-hmm.
was about the variety. You know, they didn't want a relationship. You know, a mistress, that's a totally different story. With a mistress, there is an emotional relationship. And that's because, there isn't something that they're getting from the marriage, which isn't necessarily the wife's fault, but very often there are things that a woman, you know, could and should do to keep that. Boy, I think you're in New York City. that's not at my end, guys.
You know, I'm sorry about. I live.
No, that happens to
I
me
live
sometimes
up the street
too.
From the fire department. So, and uh-huh. it's a warm day here in Seattle. So I've got the windows open.
Yeah, no, I live right down the street from a firehouse, so I get that a lot.
You get that.
It's
yeah.
interesting that I almost never get it on the, you know, on the phone with somebody else. It's like, oh, he's just fine.
I know. Well, hopefully they could still hear you. I'm probably they can, or maybe the producers at Progressive Radio Network can help that. Anyway, so yes, I agree that a lot of successful men feel entitled. There
yeah.
may be for many of these men an overlay of narcissism, and a sense
mm-hmm.
of entitlement is very typical
mm-hmm.
of the narcissist.
Yeah. And also there are some things, I mean, believe it or not, there are still some women who refuse to perform oral sex.
Yes, let's talk about that, because just as an aside here, back in 1991, I was at a World Congress for Sexology in Amsterdam, and the woman who at that time, now this is 1991, so this is a while ago, the woman who was running all of the prostitutes in the Netherlands, who headed it up and made sure they got their health exams and this and that, she gave a workshop for women only at the World Congress for Sexology, which is what it was. And because she had been a woman in the window at one time and then graduated to this administrative job. And so the women in the workshop, I think there were about 20 of us, the title of the workshop was How to Bring Out the Prostitute Within. Well, she pointed out at that time, and it may be less so now in this day and age, again, I'm sorry about the noise. We'll just consider it background racy information.
Yeah, it's so hot that they need to call out the fire
yeah,
department.
Yeah, exactly. reminds me of a really bad joke. This blonde is in her little sports car, and she's racing along the highway in the convertible, and the cop stops her and says, where are you going to a fire, lady? And she says, no, I'm not. I'm not going to a fire, but I don't think you have a hose long enough to put it out.
Ooh.
Isn't that bad? It's internet radio, I can tell. So, anyway, let's see. So, Amsterdam. So, in those days, women the wives rarely gave blowjobs. So that was the most common request that the women in the windows got.
And this was in the 90s?
This was 91.
I was in business in the 80s, so.
Yeah. It's a little less so, don't you think, now?
I think for younger women, yeah, because, everyone's so scared, you-know-whatless about sexually transmitted diseases, mm-hmm. that I don't know how anecdotal it is or how really genuinely true it is. I mean, but you hear about girls as young as, 10 and 12 performing oral sex, which... You know,
it's pretty shocking.
Even 20 years ago, that wasn't going on. So I think that today it's much more acceptable than it was back then.
So what do you think guys are wanting today? Because it's going on today, big time.
I think that the back then that was a little pushing the envelope. Today pushing the envelope is anal sex.
Yeah.
And which we absolutely did not, we forbid.
Uh-huh.
That was not, and even if I was in business today, I would forbid it.
Uh-huh.
I suppose if the girl was willing and he paid a hefty sum, of course, of which she would get every single penny.
Yeah.
Were I in business today, I suppose I would, if the young lady absolutely was okay with it. And got whatever price she felt was fair for it, I don't know what's going on out there today, because I don't know anybody in the business anymore, and I don't pay any attention anymore. But that's the new thing now.
Mm-hmm. You also have a pretty good idea. You had it. I bet you do have it now. Even what do men like? We've already covered a little bit of it. They like a woman who can converse, that she isn't just empty-headed. They like probably a woman who's enthusiastic and uninhibited. What else do you think they like, men?
Sincerity, authenticity, genuineness. I mean, one of the things that I used to hear from clients on the phone, because most of them did want someone who was interesting, is that, and please understand, I knew you understand, Diana, but audience, please understand that I am in no way trying to criticize anybody out there, but from what I heard, that there are so many women out there who all they have to talk about with their husbands anymore is the only relationship is like the mommy daddy relationship.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they don't have as much of a personal. I mean, the most successful marriages that I know of, they make it a point to have a date night, and mm-hmm. and to take vacation just with each other. And I'm sure, you're a sex therapist. I mean, and a relationship therapist. You must run into this all the time. But so many of these men would tell me that their wives just plain old weren't very interesting. They didn't have anything to say. So I always encourage my girls to read Newsweek, watch 60 Minutes, but to be honest with you, and again, you know this, Diana, most people are happiest talking about themselves, and no one is interested in listening. I know back when I had my business, I don't like to lie. So when people would ask me what I did, I'd give sort of a generic answer, then immediately launch into, oh, and what do you do?
Right.
And I have to tell you something. There's so many people who think I'm one of the most fascinating people on the face of the earth, and yet these people know absolutely nothing about me, and I still do it to this day. It's because I listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not always looking to interject something like, oh, well, I did that too, or, you know,
exactly.
or I did something better. You know, I really sit there and listen. I'm not paying attention. Like, oh, my God, what am I going to say next? How can I interrupt them to get my two cents in? I just, over all those years of not wanting to talk about what I did, I really developed the wonderful skill of listening, which most people are completely and totally unable to do.
Active listening, where you really, really hear what the other person is saying. You look at their body language. You don't interrupt. And how clever of you to do this. Plus, you made more friends that way.
What? You know, most women are really not that interested in what their husbands do.
That's a shame.
Yeah. But I mean, so that's one of the things that a mistress will do. Mistresses know this, and that's one of the reasons that men, and a mistress is someone that you go back to over and over and over and over, and you have a, I'm not saying there's never any money involved, because there very often is, but not always.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they want someone who hears them.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
who genuinely is interested in their lives and what they're doing and what's going on, and genuinely cares.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there are just a couple of sex therapist observations. You know, over the 30 years I've been in this business, I've seen thousands of couples, and the rate of sex problems in our culture is very high. I think they're probably higher now than they were in Masters and Johnson's days in the 1970s, because people are more knowledgeable about sex than they've ever been, except, you know what they don't know, Sydney? Is how to maintain satisfying sexual relationships. So for many, it seems like how to keep sex vital in an ongoing relationship is a real mystery. You know, sex is supposed to work on its own. If you have to think about it or communicate about it or learn and try new things, something is wrong with you or the relationship. And
yeah, but Diana, don't you find that one of the reasons that women especially shun sex or aren't that interested is because there are underlying anger and resentment issues?
Oh, yeah. And going back,
they feel they do more than their fair share of the housework. They feel that no one listens to them. I think a lot of it has to do with just not being interested because you're just plain old angry and resentful and unhappy.
Yeah. So often I have to do psychotherapy before I can do sex therapy because they are so angry. And Dr. William Masters said, if things are going well in the living room, then they'll be going well in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, couples aren't going to want to have sex. They aren't going to want to make love.
Well, the man is, just because they just want to, you know, men can have sex just to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
Most women can't. I mean, women want to make love. Women want there to be an emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and that's a gross generalization, because there are certainly plenty of men who want the emotional connection too. But there are a lot of men, as you know, that the only way they feel they have the emotional connection is through sex. You know, they're not able to talk, or they're not able to show their partner in other ways that they love them and care for them.
Well, Sydney Biddle Barrows, the former Mayflower Madam, you were very wise, and we're going to continue to talk about this and also the business end of your life when we come back from the break. So we want everybody listening to stay with us, and of course, many people are listening to this because they've archived it, and we're happy to have you listening as well. So we'll be right back.
Cosa leggerai con che libro affascini il tuo cuore e se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore.
We are back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter, and we're in this new time slot, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yeah, new time, same quality programming. And I hope by listening to the first half of this program, you are realizing that. Sydney Biddle Barrows, the former Mayflower Madam who wrote the book Mayflower Madam, which went right to the top of the New York Times bestselling list. She was in Fortune magazine. The 10 best business books of the year. And, yeah, maybe this is a good way to segue into what you're doing these days. I know you have something very intriguing. People can read about it. We've already mentioned that website, the Roadblock Removal. So talk a little bit about that and how it came to be.
Well, I started out doing business consulting. After the book hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list, I started being asked to speak to various groups. And I spoke at a lot of colleges, including some in the Ivy League. And then I also started speaking to business groups. And after the, when I spoke to business groups, afterwards people would come up and ask me if I did consulting. And I didn't know what consulting was any more than I knew what an escort service was when I first heard about it. And so I kind of blew them off and told them, I was just too busy to do any consulting right now. But then when I realized that they were going to pay me money to do it, and
right.
and I needed it, I started asking and listening, and everyone basically told me they were looking for the same thing. And I thought to myself, I think I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing business consulting, and without realizing it, my real area of expertise is the customer experience. I mean, with my former business, what was really different between my business and the dozens and dozens and dozens of other businesses exactly like it in New York City? The big difference was the way we treated our clients.
Yeah.
And, I made it a point to find out what was it that they were looking for, and then I reverse engineered everything we did in order to produce that experience. And so when I went in to do the consulting, I sort of subconsciously went at it from that perspective and that point of view. And I started doing really well, because what does differentiate what you do from everyone else who does what you do? And for the most part, it's the experience that your customer, your client, your patient has when they're doing business with you, when they're on your premises, when I'm on the phone with you, I mean everything. So I started out with that. And then I found out about this energy psychology work that I call Roadblock Removal. And at first I incorporated it into my business, because as every consultant will tell you, people pay you thousands of dollars to come in and tell them what's wrong with their business and what they could or should do about it, and the vast majority of them never do anything. So
why do you
realize
that is, Sydney? Why people spend all this money
people
and then
don't like
do anything?
Change. It scares them. They don't like change.
Mm-hmm.
The people who work for them don't like change, and so many of them are so used to their boss going off to some, conference and coming back with all these great ideas that he tells them to do, and they know that all they have to do is make it look like they're doing it for a week or two, and then he'll go on and forget about it, and they can just go back to doing it the way they used to.
Mm-hmm.
And so people don't like change. And
so how do you make it more palatable for your clients?
Well, what I do is I take away the roadblocks that they have to the change. I mean, it's all I take away those roadblocks, and I do that with relationships. For instance, one of my clients actually came to me for a business reason, and when I asked her if there's anything, was there anything else that she could use some help with, she said, she goes, I don't know if you could help me with this, but I find myself lately just snapping at my husband. She said everything he says just seems to me to be the stupidest, dumbest, most idiotic thing I ever heard in my life.
Mm.
And I just can't help but say something about it. She goes, and I realized I'm doing it in front of my children. She said, and that's wrong. And I didn't say to her, I said, and before you know it, you're going to be divorced too, because he's not going to be able to take it any longer if you're constantly on his case the way you're telling me you are.
Yeah.
So I started working with her on that, in addition to the business things that she'd originally hired me for.
Yes.
And after two sessions, because that's how fast this is, she said, Sydney, she said, you're not going to believe it. The other day, Anthony said something that was just the most moronic thing. Normally, she said, I would have gone into orbit about it. And she said, you know what? It just... It's like I had a Teflon shield around me. She said, it just didn't bother me at all. And
And then she was having issues with her children. And she was always yelling at them for one thing or another, and because they were always irritating her and not doing what she said. And so I worked with her on that. And what was interesting, and, you know, no surprise to you, Diana, but, you know, the minute she stopped yelling at them and getting on their case and scolding them and making a big deal about all these things, they actually started to behave.
Exactly. So it also
has a lot to do. And then I also had a client who had, let's call them female problems, that after a few sessions went away. And this is because, you know, a lot of my friends are older, just as I am. Can we say lubrication issues? Is that something we can say on the show?
We can say most things because of internet radio. And by the way, while we're paused, your first client sounded like part of her problem was being maybe perimenopausal, real reactive.
That's very possible. I know. I had another client who was having real hormone swings.
Yeah.
And I worked with her, and they just, after three or four sessions, they were just gone. I mean, she said,
yeah.
She said, I used to be so mercurial. And she said, and it scared me sometimes because she said, I didn't even know when it was coming. And it cured all that. But this other woman, actually she was a personal friend, she wasn't a client,
uh-huh.
And she was complaining about lubrication issues, and I worked with her, and now that is not an issue at all. I had a colleague who'd had a hysterectomy who just could not get over that. I feel the internal stitches. Like 3 months later, she still couldn't climb stairs. And after one session, I'm not kidding you, may a lightning bolt come and strike me down. After one session, she didn't have a twinge since. So a lot of this stuff is emotional. And what I do is I get rid of those roadblocks that are
mm-hmm.
causing
mm-hmm.
All this stuff.
You get to wear many hats in your consulting business.
Yeah, and as much as I love the business consulting, just because I love it, it is so much more rewarding, Diana, to do this roadblock removal work. And because what it does is it enables people to just naturally and instinctively do the things that they like to do and to be the person they want to be. I mean, that person who was yelling at her husband, she didn't want to be that kind of person, you know.
No, they usually have remorse after the blow up.
Yeah, but they still can't stop it. With weight loss, oh my God. I mean, every single person who I've worked with will tell you that I looked at that bread basket and I didn't even want it. Or after church, I always go to, these are all true stories. I'm not making this up.
No,
after church, every Sunday, my husband and my daughter and I, we always go to the Dairy Queen. And after I'd worked with her a couple times, the husband said to her, okay, what would you like? And she thought about it. She goes, you know what? I really don't want anything. And
uh-huh.
she said, oh, come on. And she said, no, she says, I really don't want it. And she said, Sydney, it has nothing to do with, oh, no, I can't have it, I shouldn't have it. It's not like that. You really become transformed into being a person who truly does not care to have the bread and doesn't really want the ice cream.
Okay,
and that's what's
Sydney,
so great about this work.
Give just an example or two of some of the stepping stones that your clients have to step on in order to get to that place. What might be an example or two?
Well, see, that's the best part. Oh, see, that's the best part, because when I tell you what the process is, you are going to think, Sydney Biddlebarrows, if that doesn't sound like the 21st century version of snake oil, I don't know what does. But I'm telling you, I have had, and Diana, I have a reputation to maintain. Okay, not to maintain, actually to protect.
Protect. There you go.
And I'm not. I mean, at this point in my life, there is no way I am getting involved with anything that's even remotely shady. I can't afford it. I don't want to do it. So you know, this is completely totally legitimate. Believe it or not, all they have to do is nothing. It's done over the telephone. Sorry about that. I was lowering the shades. Didn't realize it was so noisy. It's done over the telephone, and all the client has to do is just sit or lay on the couch or the bed or whatever and just be. No multitasking, no running around. You're just, I mean, I have people sit in their cars. They close the door to their office. They do whatever they do. And you just lay there and be. And I do all the work. You know, they don't have to tell me anything about themselves. There's none of this drudging through the muck and the mud and remembering all these horrible things that happened to you and the crime. There's none of that. You don't have to tell me anything about yourself at all, unless you want to. And some people do and some people don't. And it's just the most, I just got an email from somebody this morning. His mother recently died, and they had a very tumultuous relationship because it sounded like she was a really horrible person. I know he won't be listening to this, so I can say that, but I mean, God, what an awful woman this person was.
Yeah.
And but still his mother, and he still had remorse. And after just two sessions, it's really remarkable. She was a hoarder, and he's now going through the house. He had terrible guilt with, you know, getting rid of all her stuff because she was such a hoarder, and she was always, you know, remonstrating against, you know, you can't throw this out. And a very negative, negative woman. And now he's able to easily go through. And I mean, he's not throwing stuff away as much as he's giving this to this charity and giving that to that charity. But he's able to go through and do that. And, you know, while there's still a grieving process, it's not, he doesn't feel as guilty. Before he felt guilty, now he just feels sad that she's gone. But before there was this tremendous guilt, and now that's all gone.
I suspect part of the process is that your clients, if they're just sitting and being and maybe focusing, they are able to borrow your power. That is to say, they feel more empowered because you're giving them this advice.
No, I give them no advice.
You don't give advice.
This is not talking therapy by any stretch of the imagination.
Well,
no, what I do is I determine what the different the energy is, the negative energy,
mm-hmm.
that is what this roadblock is. I determine, it's too long a story to explain to you what, you know,
yeah,
how I do,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
but
of course.
But I determine what that negative energy is, and then I release it. And there is no talk. If anything, they're not supposed to say anything.
I see. And
they,
what,
do nothing. It's
what
it's the
was
ultimate
your collaboration. Did you learn some of this, or did you already know it when you?
Oh no, no, no! I learned this.
Genius.
I had a client,
Dan Kennedy.
No, Dan Kennedy had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
I was doing teleseminars on the customer experience, and every once a month, and then the next week I would have a call-in day, and you know, if you got to me on the phone, if you were able to get through, you got 20 minutes of my time. And this woman called up who had learned how to do this, and she wanted to start a business because she had absolutely no business skills. And when I told her how much it was going to cost her, she said, oh, my God, there's just no way I could possibly do this.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, do you do barter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Diana, my landlord doesn't take barter, and Con Ed doesn't take barter, and I don't take barter.
However,
all of a sudden, I hear the word yes coming out, or okay, coming out of my mouth. I was stunned.
You surprised yourself.
I surprised myself. I'm telling you, it was something impelled me to do this. So I did it. I did the barter thing with her, and I was so blown away with how easy it was,
mm-hmm.
and how well it worked, and how because I'd spent more than 25 years in therapy. I mean, I've been therapy to death,
mm-hmm.
and so I know what that's like. And this is absolutely nothing like that. I mean, you know, if I wanted to, wouldn't have had to tell her anything about me. But it's not like therapy at all. It's very quick, which is the good news and the bad news. It's good for the client, but it's terrible for me because, you know, after 4, 6, 8 sessions, I mean, people, you know, whatever
people
issue
graduate.
They came to me, yeah, they're done. Which isn't to say that there might not be other things that they want to work on, which often happens because, like, once you've improved some areas of your life, it's like, you know, you paint the living room and you get a new carpet and all of a sudden the couch looks, you know, the upholstery starts looking bad and you need to reupholster everything. And in a way, but if you came to me because you had a dirty carpet, and once your carpet's clean, you know, then all of a sudden you realize you've got other stuff, which you do or don't have to do anything about. And some people choose not to do anything about it, and other people do. But it's very, very quick. So it's bad for me because I'm constantly, you know, having to find new clients. It's great for them because they're often living, you know, a happy life.
You published a book called Uncensored Sales Strategies, which
mm-hmm.
you co-authored with, you described him on the phone to me off the air as a marketing genius, and he found you, Dan Kennedy.
Oh, yeah, he's one of the most brilliant men on the face of the earth, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, well, talk a little bit about your collaboration and the Uncensored sales strategy.
Well, that wasn't that. He named it that. I would never have named it that. But that's what he wanted to name it. And, you know, he's a marketing genius. So, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's the kind of thing where you see it on a shelf with all of the other, you know, business books. And you say, wow, that sounds, you know what I mean? At least you'll pick it up. Because it's like, what the heck could that be about?
Yeah.
So it did very well, and it's still in print. In fact, I'm working on a workbook because I've had so many business owners. My main target market when it comes to business is entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, professional practices. I'm not interested in working with, you know, the IBMs and the Coca-Colas and, you know, the banks and the big banks. That has absolutely no interest for me. Mm-hmm. I like working with the people who own the business, the people who write the check, as I often say.
Right.
You know, I like impacting people's lives, you know, people who are my clients. And if it also helps their employees and their family, well, that's great. But I'm not interested in helping big corporations. That just doesn't work for me.
I wanted to say that if any of the live listeners want to call in with a question for Sydney, the number is 888-874-4888. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a call. We just have a few more minutes left, but...
No, we don't. Are you kidding? An hour's gone already?
Yeah, well, we need to stop at about 3 minutes before the hour because that's what PRN... Yes, well, you know, we're having fun.
Oh
it goes
God.
Quickly.
It does go quickly.
Yeah, so you're working on a workbook, and how will people use this? I mean,
they'll use it in conjunction with Uncensored Sales Strategies, with the
of
book.
Course.
I've had so many people who say that, that they're using it in their businesses with their employees.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a number of colleagues who have coaching groups, and they use it in their coaching groups. And I've had people, way too many people say to me, you know, I'd really love to have a workbook, chapter by chapter workbook, so that I could, you know, get my people to, you know, work along with this rather than just have them read it and talk about it, you know, actually have them do some work with respect to it. So that's what I'm working on now.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, SydneyBarrows.com, I like to think it will be up by the middle to the end of October. In a way, those Russians did me a favor because I probably wouldn't. My last website wasn't that great, and now I'm completely revamping it. Roadblock removal, however, is up and running.
So again,
it doesn't have as many testimonials on it as it should because I'm so busy sort of doing the work that I haven't had a chance to sit down and go through the gazillion testimonials I have.
Yeah.
And that really has to, after SydneyBarrows.com goes up, I've really got to sit down and go through the testimonials for roadblock removal because that's what sells it.
That's what
that's
does
what
it.
Sells
but
it.
Meantime,
yeah.
People can look at it, roadblockremoval.com. Yeah, I think, you know, as I talk to you both off the air and on the air, it sounds like you're really engaged in your business and you really like what you're doing. And that's essential, of course, that we bring
yeah, well,
a certain
Diana,
amount of
you
passion.
Know what it's like. I mean, both yeah. you and I do something that personally impacts people, but that after mm-hmm. they're, while they're working with us and after they're working with us, they're really happier and their
mm-hmm.
lives are really going better. And I'm sure you get the same incredible sense of gratification and satisfaction that I do when somebody tells you, oh my God, you know, you've really changed my life. You've really made a difference in my life. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't, you know, then finish the sentence. But I'm sure you have the same experience.
I do. And, I also find that when couples come in just to give a sex therapy, couples therapy example, they're so much better off coming in 6 months after the problem rather than 6 years. But unfortunately, a lot of them live with the problem for 6 years.
Well, the problem is a lot that they live with the problem until it gets to the point where they want a divorce.
Well,
and at that point, a lot of times it's too late because, you know, once you've made up your mind that I don't want to be here anymore,
mm-hmm.
it's really, really, really just about impossible
mm-hmm.
to change that. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know just in my personal life, forget about all of the clients that I knew of, that stay until the last kid goes off to college or gets finished with college, and then they're out of there. I mean, I'm sure you've run across this too. They stay for the kids, and then once that's over, they're out of there.
That's true. Sometimes the husband and the wife will look at each other after the kids are gone, and they say, well, what can we talk about? What do we have to talk about?
Yeah. Well, a lot of times one of them has it in their mind up for years that's what they're waiting for. I can't tell you how many just people I know personally have just waited for years for that time so they can finally get out.
I know.
So people shouldn't let it go that far.
Absolutely not, because ideally the empty nest really should become the love nest. Couples have more privacy. Their children are launched, and hopefully they don't come back home like a boomerang.
Yeah, that's got to be a real problem. Although, you know, for couples who really don't have that much going on between them, it must be kind of a blessing to have the kids back, because it keeps them together, because they don't have to focus on what they don't have themselves together.
Yeah, but it's so unhealthy. And
I agree.
I love. Let's see if I can find it. In your bio, I love what it says at the end.
That I have no pets, no plants, no children, and no regrets.
I knew you could. You live in the Upper West Side. You have no pets, no plants, no children, and no regrets. It's good to be an older woman, a woman, say, past 50, and to be able to say that, no regrets.
I actually wrote that a long time ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think it's better to have one or two regrets about what you have done than what you have not done. Do you know what I mean?
That's a nice line, and obviously I do have some regrets, and you're absolutely right. It's only about what I have not done. I really don't regret anything, for the most part, that I have done.
Right.
It's what I haven't done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true. I bet you most people
would tell you
that.
Mm-hmm. So, in our final minutes, I'm wondering if you could say that between your former cachet, your escort business, were there, and then now with your roadblock removal coaching business, so personal takeaways, so I'm asking you, and you may not want to answer this because it's kind of personal, but any general kind of sexual things that women should watch out for, should some suggestions, and then we'll go to the business thing because we have to stop in about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Takeaway.
I would say, what works for me is focusing on him and making him feel special. I mean, if every night when you went to bed, you told your partner, like, three things about him that day that you really appreciated or that you're in gratitude for, you thank them. I mean, I've always been a very grateful person. I can't tell you how many times throughout my whole life that I've had people, you know, say to me, I just, one of the greatest things about you is you're so appreciative of what I do. I mean, even when I was married, when my husband would take me out to dinner, I would thank him.
Of course.
And I'm always very, very grateful. People love to be recognized, and people love to be appreciated.
It's
and
very
I think
true.
That if, yeah, and I think we just need more of that. And people have got to do something about their underlying anger issues. I mean, if you've got underlying anger issues, until that's resolved, it's going to be a real tough road to hoe.
Yes, and sometimes some counseling or some coaching is necessary.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't know why you're angry. Like my client who was sniping at her husband had absolutely no idea why she was angry at him.
Uh-huh.
She couldn't put her finger on anything. She just, you know, all of a sudden everything he said, he was a complete and total blithering idiot.
Well, a piece of it could have been her hormones.
That's possible.
I mean, just a part of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. But
all right,
too young,
so that's,
actually,
that's a very good takeaway, to focus in on the man. I like that, to be more positive, to be more appreciative. I certainly have found over the years that
I've done marital
counseling. Yeah, gratitude is so important. Couples, often they unravel because there's no emotional nourishment. And then we have I guess, about a minute, if that. Business-wise, what have you learned? What's a takeaway that you could share with our audience?
I think that the better an experience, like, for instance, I have a lot of dentists as clients, and my motto for my dentist clients is, we are going to put a smile in the heart of your patients. Tell me the last person you've ever heard of who had a smile in their heart when they thought about going to the dentist. So it's this person's business has exploded. So it's all about the kind of experience they have when they do business with you, when they're on the phone with you or your staff, when they come in, the way they're treated. If you do that in a way that makes them feel good about themselves, makes them good about spending their money, and makes them feel good about spending their money with you, that's the most important part.
Spending their money with you. Oh, that's excellent. Well, I happen to know that you are an exceptional woman. And I am so pleased that you are have been my guest, and not only today, but back August 22nd. And we'll have you back in a few months, I hope.
That'd be great. It'd be my pleasure.
Continue the conversation. And, again, thank you so much, Sydney Barrows, for being my guest today.
My pleasure.
And, everybody, tune in next week. Dr. Ava Cadell will be my guest. Bye-bye.